Accession number 19023, Reel 1.
Zipama, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Hull, East Yorks.
Which year was this?
This was 1919.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Hull?
I did, yes.
And which school did you go to?
Oh, I went to one or two schools. My family seemed to move around a bit. East Hull mainly, finishing up at Southcoats Lane.
How old were you when you finished there?
14.
So that would have been in 33.
That's right.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I did. I got a job with the Hull Corp in the chemist shop, doing all the odd jobs and deliveries. And when I was 16, because they wouldn't pay the extra stamp duty, they moved you to the dairy. And that became my life for the rest of my life, actually.
Where was the dairy?
In Great Thornton Street.
Is that what you were doing when war was declared?
Yes. Yes.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I'm not sure about that, because the only reason I joined the army was because the beer was cheaper and they had very good snooker tables.
Cheaper than where?
Oh, the pubs and everywhere, in the barracks. And it was very good. I enjoyed it. And then we were on parade. We were called up, actually, 4 days before war started.
So, to make it clear, you joined the TA?
I joined the TA, yes.
Do you know when you joined the TA?
Let me see, it would be roughly around April 39. I didn't know there was going to be a war.
Would you have joined the TA if you had thought that?
Oh, I think so, yes.
What unit of the TA did you join?
I joined the Service Corps. I started off in 523 Company, which was in the 151 Infantry Brigade, which was probably the most active brigade in the war. That was the petrol company, and 4 days before we were on parade the third day before the war started, when we were told that war had been declared. So I didn't really hear it as such, and we were sent home complete with rifle and uniform, etc. And we had to report back every day till the day war was actually started. We were then moved to Coxo in Durham. And at Coxo, we were split up, and I became one of 50 men who were sent to Newcastle as drivers to join the 149 Field Ambulance Unit. And I remained with them practically the whole of the war.
So when did you transfer to the Field Ambulance Unit about?
Oh, it would be before Christmas, 39.
And what were they equipped with?
Nothing. Nothing at all when we got there. We had no transport, and we were moved to Dorset. To, what did they call it? Shipton under Wychwood. Not Dorset, Oxfordshire. Shipton under Wychwood. And we were there. We were equipped with army transport and taught to drive. Because up till then I'd never driven, and which was another reason why I joined the TA. and we learnt to drive, and then from then on we practiced and practiced, and eventually I got my driving license from Dorchester, and we stayed there till, when was it, early 1940, and we moved to France, and I left my transport on the dock, because I used to drive a car then, a beautiful car, a big Humber Pullman, which the Colonel used to ride in, and went on the boat, and they took me off the boat at Cherbourg on a stretcher. I'd caught pneumonia, and the unit moved on, and I stayed in the hospital at Cherbourg, came out of there and was strengthened up, and then I was given a rail pass, couldn't speak a word of French, and put on a train to Lille.
How do you think you'd caught pneumonia?
Haven't a clue. Haven't a clue. I was really bad with it. It was so bad that they even thought of sending for my mother, and I wouldn't let them when I was in hospital. And they looked after me pretty well. But I was very weak afterwards, and I did about a couple of weeks strengthening up at these French barracks there, which were filthy. And I was pleased to get out of those. And eventually I got this movement order, and I got on this train, and there was I can remember in the carriage with me, there was a girl and a Frenchman, and he said to me, "You're a bit young to be a soldier." So I said, "Well, you've got to start somewhere." And I got off at Paris. I don't know where they were going. The Gare du Nord. And I picked up another train. And the first time I'd been on a train with wooden seats. And went to Lille. And I got off at Lille. And there was I don't know what he would be. There was this British communications fellow of some sort on the station. And I asked him where my unit was, and he took details, and he said, "Your best bet's to wait in the waiting room." And I fell asleep. And this was at night, and I was woken up by the sergeant major, who said, "Come on, lad, we're going." And we went to a place called Chateau du Bois, the chateau in the woods. And believe it or not, we were stationed in the pigsties. That's where we lived. All cleaned out and disinfected.
Did it smell of pigs?
No, it didn't. It smelled of disinfectant. And we started then. I mean, I'd done a bit of driving. Most people had, but not a lot. We were fully equipped. And then, of course, the blow came when Jerry attacked. We moved. That was a problem with all the transport moving about. And then we moved back. And then we moved somewhere else. It was complete chaos. I hadn't a clue where we were going. Not a clue. And we kept getting shot up and that. And
by what?
Planes. I think it was Arras. We were going through Arras, and we had these planes coming, and everybody dived for cover, and we were at a school there, near a school, and we went down in the basement, and it was quite a heavy bombing, though, and when I came up, my car was in flames. And that's why in my pay book it said, "Previous AB-64 destroyed by enemy action." It had been in the pocket of my jacket. And I lost my car. I lost everything I had then. And we started then heading for Dunkirk. And I got a lift on an ambulance, which had all sorts of people in it, including some DLI who were firing through the back window of the ambulance at these planes and that. It really was a shambles with all the roads blocked. I remember we came to a crossroad, and there was a MP conducting traffic, and the driver, I got out at the back, and the driver was shouting to him, "Come on, let us through." He said, "You're holding us up." And he said, "I'm not holding you up." He said, "I'm holding a full division up as we were moving." And eventually we came within striking distance of Tobruk.
Tobruk?
Not Tobruk.
Dunkirk.
And we had to leave the ambulance and walk through all this traffic, because they were all burning, trucks were burning, and wrecks and all sorts. And eventually we came to the beach, and we found most of the unit, and we headed for the groin that went out. And we managed to get onto a destroyer there, because I remember I was so tired that I fell asleep between the funnels. And I can remember the shells coming between the funnels and bursting the other side of the destroyer. And we came back, and the only thing I had was my tin helmet. And we got back here, and we were put on a train to Knutsford, and I just slept the whole way to Knutsford. And it took me about 3 days to pull ourselves around.
Could I just stop you there and ask you a few questions about the BEF?
Yeah.
First of all, do you remember the name of the destroyer?
No. Not a clue. Didn't even know when I was getting on that it was a destroyer. I was half asleep.
So you weren't aware of any enemy action against the ship going across?
Oh, yes, we were getting bombed all the time going across. But you were so tired, I just couldn't have cared less.
And when you were in that ambulance with the DLI, did the ambulance have red crosses on it?
It did, yeah.
And did the enemy respond to the fire coming from the ambulance?
They didn't. Oh, no, they bombed it anyway. I mean, this went on most of the war. I mean, the Red Cross didn't help you much. Yeah.
And had your unit disintegrated in Belgium, or did it hold together?
It was pretty compact. But it was so out of date. I mean, when you saw what they had and what we had, I can remember the colonel then, before all this happened, we were going out on a recce, and he was obviously knew where the defensive position was going to be, and he was planning his stations behind the lines. We came to this hill, and he had the major with him, and I was driving the car, and he said, "Oh, well, we can put curtains up here." He said, "That will blank it off." And I said to him, I said, "But they do have planes." He just lived in the past. He was thinking of the last war. He didn't come, after we came back to England, I don't know where he went, he didn't come back with us there. But, it was a bit rough, that. In fact, it was so rough, I thought that I'd never see anything as bad. I was never so wrong in my life. Is that?
What about once you got back to England?
Right, well, when we got back to England, we didn't stay at Knutsford very long. We moved down to Dorset, and we got re-equipped. Because at that time, if you remember, they thought that Jerry might attack on the south coast. And most of what was left was down there. We got re-equipped pretty quick. And we just carried on training and that down there. We did a fair bit of duties, like at night, certainly at night we were out stopping cars and all this sort of thing. I had one job of going around the farms and recording all the vehicles there were and the condition of them and whatnot in case they were needed. And it wasn't too bad down there. And then, of course, we went up to... from there, we went up to... was it? I think it was Glasgow.
So you're still in the same unit?
Oh, I stayed in the unit, in the 50 Div.
But had they had any losses in France?
We hadn't. We didn't have any. We all got away. I think it's with getting away on the destroyers, because those on the beach, they had the problems.
But you lost all your equipment?
Oh, yeah, everything we had. except my tin hat.
Did you get re-equipped? In
the yeah. Room? Yes, we were soon re-equipped.
I think you said you went up to Newcastle, did you?
Well, that was early on, when we joined the 149. The 50 of us moved up there as their drivers.
And then what happened, you remember happening next?
We boarded a liner. It was at Glasgow. We got on the Duchess of Bedford, the 20,000 tonner she was. And I can remember seeing this boat, and there was a swaddy putting load in it. They were loading it, and as I passed him, I said, "That's a nice boat." He says, "That's not a boat, laddie, that's a ship." And they loaded us up, and we eventually pulled out. And what was interesting about this is this ship at that time had not yet been converted to a troop ship. The cabins were all there, and on the bunks and beds there were mattresses. And the dining room was laid out with big, long wooden tables. And we had a four-berth one. The one I was in was a four-berth. And it was very good. They fastened all the doors back. And the jobs we had to do on that ship was simply guard duties. Other people, like the top deck was the anti-aircraft and jobs like that. But we got done for the guard duties, which meant about once a week. And we were well up on the decks. There were only four ships in this convoy. It was a fast convoy, and one of them was the Ark Royal and the Sheffield. And those two left us. We went nearly across the Atlantic and then turned south. And I can't remember whether we pulled into Juba or not. Or whether I know we went into Cape Town, but I can't remember whether we pulled into Jib. But they left us before we got there, these two. And about 4 days later, they rejoined us, having sunk the Bismarck. And we headed down. Then we pulled into, Sierra Leone on the way. We had a week in Cape Town, which was very good. They really looked after us, the people there. And we got £3 to spend of wages. They gave us £3. I don't think I spent any of mine. Nobody would let you pay for anything. They were really fine. They used to wait for you coming off the ship, and there was some Dutch people picked us up one night, and they took us home. Oh, and they did feed us. You know, it was that sort of interest. We were in a cafe one day, and we're looking whether we could afford this, and we thought, "Oh, go on, we'll have it." And we went in, and the fresh fruit and the ice creams and that was smashing. When we came to pay the bill, he said, "Oh, those ladies over there have paid it." And it went on like that. And we went round the C2C factory, the cigarette factory. And as we're going round, the girls were giving you packs of cigarettes and you were stuffing them in your battle dress. And lo and behold, when we got to the end, They gave us quite a meal, and we all got a parcel of cigarettes as well. Yeah, it was very good. That. And there was nothing much happened then. We pulled round and we pulled into, would it be Madagascar, on the way up, and into the Red Sea, and there was a liner on fire when we got to Egypt. This had only been hit the day before. I know she was saved, this liner, but she was burning when we were there, and it was hot, and we had these pith helmets and whatnot, and you were wet through with sweat. And we got on a train to go to the camp, and it got derailed, so we had to just sit there till they got another train up to us and then go on that. And then went to I forget what they call the place now, but it's a big army camp there where the cinemas had no tops on, you know, and that. And we got sort of acclimatized there before going up the desert.
Yeah. What date have we reached now about?
Oh, I can tell you that. I think.
Don't worry about records, just go from memory.
Well, we're in 41. We're still in 41. And I went up and down the desert twice. I mean, the second time we got chased out. The first time we were up, it was we were in these boxes at yon side of Tobruk, it was. And they were about half a mile. I don't know whether you've heard of them before. But with the 151, we had the 6th, 8th, and 9th DLI, the 74th Field Regiment of Artillery. I forget the others, but they were all had units in the boxes, and you were sort of sat behind them. They kept changing the units over. A very effective hold-up, that was.
Which box did you go into?
151 box. And we must have come out of there and gone back again, because I remember we went up to... up to Iraq.
What were conditions like in these boxes?
Oh, they were all right. If you want a war, have it in a desert. It's the place to have a war, particularly if it's a hot country, because nothing moves from about 11 o'clock in the morning till about 4 or 5 in the afternoon. It's so hot. And we had a crafty way of doing our dugouts. We used to dig a trench, maybe 4 foot, 5 foot deep. And then we used to put two side trenches into it for beds to lay on, but not to that depth. And then we used to put a couple of rows of sandbags around the top, leave gaps between the sandbags, and cover the top with a piece of tarpaulin. And that was very effective. The air could get through the top. You slept at either side, and you were, you know, below ground level. Most of your afternoons were spent either under the truck or in one of those because of the heat.
What about the work you were doing in the field ambulance unit at that time?
Oh, driving, just driving. There wasn't a lot, until you were in action, there wasn't a lot to do for anybody, really. We went out on patrols. In fact, the first one of our unit got killed on patrols. A lad called David Farrow, smart lad, and he always used to drive an ambulance and ride at the back. And he got so annoyed with doing this that he played hell and asked if he could drive at the front. And actually, the laddie who changed with him is still alive, but his health's not very good. And I was talking to him last year at the dinner, and I mentioned this to him about David getting killed and that, and he said Yeah, he said if he hadn't insisted on changing with me, he said how it would have been me. But the Stukas came as they were getting lined up to pull out on this patrol, and the first bombs dropped either side of him.
Did you see this happen?
I saw it afterwards, yes. And that was unfortunate because he was a nice lad.
This was a daytime patrol, was it?
It was dusk. Going out at dusk. Right. We did that, then we went to this airfield. They were trying to get a convoy through to Malta. And they went out with a hell of a lot of trucks. And I was driving a 1500 weight Chev then, and mounted on the back of mine was two machine guns and a gunner and another one beside me in the cab. And it was fairly peaceful going out, and they shot this aerodrome up, and then everybody belted out like mad, and you split up. You never go more than 200 yards. You know, you keep your distance 200 yards between anybody. And we belted off just as day was breaking back to our own lines. And one lad standing up alongside of you, looking out the top for the planes coming over. And as soon as he sees the plane diving, he tells you. And then you either decide whether to turn left or right. And usually they miss it. You know, if you keep going like that, you do quite well. And we got back from that all right. In fact, I don't think anything got hit.
So most of your experience at this time was of dodging German air attacks in between long periods of inactivity.
Yes. Although I had a knack, I could find my way about the desert. So I got all the jobs of travelling around, and one of them was to go back to Mersa Matru. You weren't allowed to go back on the road. There's only one road, because everything coming was on that road, and you could go that way, you could come back on it. But you had to travel down in the desert. And I used to travel about half a mile in the desert from the road. And I got so used to doing that there was markers I could pick up as well as my compass. I used to spot markers. And once or twice I put my own markers up. And we used to go to Mersa Matru for supplies, particularly beer. Because it was Canadian beer we used to have. It used to come in long wooden boxes, and all those that were broken or that, they would replace for you. So we used to keep cracking one or two open by knocking the top off, drinking the beer, taking the tops in. They never argued. I remember once going back to Mersa Matru, and I'd had an experience there of being bombed at night, and I thought, you know, if you get there after 5 o'clock at night, you have to find out where to leave your truck. You've got to get dug in somewhere, and I found a wadi about 3 miles this side of Mersa, and I found I could get my truck in there, just off the road. So I had to take this second lieutenant once. He was going on leave. There was only once that there was any...